The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Good morning and welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield Community Radio. Sean Sayre here with you this morning. We're live and local in our WTBR studio and glad to have you along with us today. We have a great show coming up. As you know, the election is only, it's less than 3 weeks away already. It's amazing how quickly this has gone, and we have a very important show for this year's election. We have Nadia Miller on the show today. She is a candidate for Congress in the 1st Mass District, running against Representative Richard Neal. And we're going to be talking to Nadia all morning, actually all the full hour that we have here, all about her run and the issues that she sees are the most important here in the district and in the nation. So it's going to be a very good show. Stick around for that. First, let's go to the weather forecast and see what we have in store for us today from the National Weather Service.
Berkshire Weather.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, widespread frost with patchy fog this morning. Sunny. Highs in the mid-50s. North wind around 5 miles per hour. Tonight, clear. Widespread frost after midnight. Lows in the lower 30s. North wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Friday, widespread frost in the morning. Sunny. Highs in the lower 60s. North wind around 5 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
Well, for any of you wondering where the cold weather was, here it is. First couple of days with some real frost. At least the mosquitoes will be gone. Definitely after that, frost comes through. And we had a little bit of that on our car windows this morning and all around on the grass. So we're going to see again that tomorrow morning for sure. All right, welcome to the show. It's Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, and I'm happy to welcome Nadia Miller on to the show. Good morning, Nadia. How are you?
Well, thank you, Sean. Thank you so much for having me. This is super, super important. It's very difficult to let voters know that I'm on the ballot. The Secretary of State does not publish the names of candidates, so people do not have the opportunity to look me up. In addition, my advertisements are in Springfield, and you have to be a multimillionaire in order to put advertisements on the Boston and in Albany in order to reach the whole district. So this is a crucial interview because some people will be hearing about me for the first time, and it might be the only time that they're able to hear about what I am planning to do as a representative.
All right. Well, we appreciate you coming in today to talk about these very important issues and for your time in running for an office, which I hand it to anybody who does. It's a job in itself. It's very difficult, and the emotions swing up and down. It's can be a very tough thing, so we give you credit for all the work you put in. Tell us about yourself at the very beginning here.
So I was an apolitical person. I believed prior to 2019 that politics was a dirty business, that you need a lot of money to become engaged in it, and that it was corrupt, that even when you try to move things forward, the powers that be kind of do their shenanigans behind the scene, and then all your efforts go to naught. So I, even though my family encouraged me to run, they said, you have charisma, leadership, and focus, and you could do this. And I said, no, I'm not running for any office. Because it's not a good thing to be involved in. But then in March 10th of 2019, my daughter boarded a new Boeing aircraft that was a 737 MAX. It was only 2 months old. She was working on accountability for the Gates Foundation. So she was all about making sure everyone has health care and looking at how money is spent globally. She was working for a company called ThinkWell, and they were evaluating in terms of the Gates funding in Uganda, how was that money actually spent? Did it actually benefit the people it was meant to benefit? And so she had flown from Washington, D.C. to Ethiopia and transferred planes. She sent us a text that morning and said, okay, two more hours to Nairobi. And I felt comfortable. I felt good because my daughter was going to be on a plane for 2 hours. She wasn't going to be in Nairobi traffic. The thought occurred to me when I read that text, oh, she's going to be safe for the next 2 hours because she'll be on a commercial plane, which is the safest mode of travel, right? And then I went downstairs to the laundry room in the middle of the night. I had to do some cleanup. I turned on the radio, and there the BBC told me that there was a crash in Ethiopia of a plane, which was Ethiopian Airlines, which was left the airport at the same time her plane was scheduled to leave and going to Nairobi for the same plane. So I knew, and I just started shaking because airlines don't have two planes leaving at the exact same time for the same destination.
Yeah.
And I also knew that my daughter was on the plane, but I didn't know there were no survivors. I just got my family in the car and we drove to JFK Airport, and it was in Qatar 12 hours later, a whole flight later, that we understood that there were no survivors. And even after that, even after learning that this was the second crash of a new plane, probably from the same cause as the other plane, probably from a defect, I still didn't want to become publicly engaged. So my uncle is Ralph Nader. He knew about this dangerous plane. He knows a lot about safety, and both in aviation, but also in other areas of our lives, air quality, food. Ralph Nader was instrumental in getting seatbelts and airbags in cars. And you know, on his own, he's credited for saving more people than died in the Vietnam War, because those are the people that would die on our highways if there weren't airbags and seatbelts in our cars. But he told me, you have to stand up as a victim's family. You have to say that this is a dangerous situation. And I said, no, I don't have to, because Boeing will certainly respond to this because it's the second crash. So they will certainly not want a third crash. And the FAA will also respond. You know, I don't need to expose myself and expose my grief and make myself more miserable by talking to the press and talking to the government. And then he showed me something which changed my mind. He showed me that the FAA had changed the comment period for getting the plane back into service from 30 days to 15 days. So they were trying to speed up the reintroduction of the plane to service. And that told me that no, Boeing and the FAA were not going to do the logical thing to save both the company and our credibility as a regulator. No, they were not going to do that. And so I did gather myself together and my husband, and we went to Washington, and we had these meetings with the NTSB, the Department of Transportation, the FAA, and eventually over 300 offices in Congress. So we just kept going from office to office to office, trying to explain to them. So we didn't have a staff. We didn't have a budget. We just had our 2 feet. And did I think I was going to do anything successful? No, actually, I did not. What I thought was, I can't live with myself if there's a third crash and I did nothing and I stayed home and I didn't try to put this in the press and alert the public. And at least the human beings that are getting on the planes should have a choice and be aware that this is a dangerous plane. If it does go back into service, which it is now back in service, and all the elements of the plane are not corrected. For example, the plane has a dashboard, which was designed in the 1970s, and it requires the pilots to turn and look through manuals when they see something is wrong. And it also has numerous alert systems, a klaxon, a voice, lights going off, blaring. A lot of these alert systems, although they're on a new plane, they go off erroneously. That pilots are used to them going off at the wrong time for no reason. And so the pilots often ignore them. That dashboard is implicated as a material cause of 11 crashes. 11 crashes. And it's still in the plane.
Wow.
So I want people to have a choice, the choice my daughter didn't have.
Yeah.
And so for that reason, I have engaged in aviation safety. And the huge surprise for me is that we were able to pass legislation. That was a big surprise for me. I felt that I was doing a useless thing. I can see the Boeing. Boeing has more than 100 lobbyists on Capitol Hill. I can see them. They're wearing suits. They wear very nice clothing. They come out with the legislators during the hearings from behind where the legislators are preparing. So we're not allowed to go in there. So I saw they had access and I felt defeated. But ultimately, our logic and just the humanity of wanting to have safe airplanes, it did prevail. And it passed unanimously the Aviation Safety Act. And it's not perfect, but it passed in December of 2020. And I learned something. I learned that I had personally a superpower, which is walking into any office, seeing no matter what the person is like, no matter what the legislator is like, if they're crazy, if they make scenes on the floor of the House or whatever they do, I see them as a human being and as capable of legislating for all of our interests. And that ability to connect with the humanity of each person has helped me pass not just that legislation, but also I went to Illinois and passed legislation, helped pass legislation for accountability for big companies. So
clearly this, and first of all, very sorry for your loss, and what a devastating thing to happen to anyone. Anyone can relate to that type of thing where, you know, you couldn't even imagine how upsetting that is for someone's life. And obviously that was the primary inspiration for you to get involved and then to run for Congress. So let's talk about, why did you choose to run as an independent in the race and not as a Democrat or a Republican?
So the Democrats are behind, you know, the Democratic power structure is behind Richard Neal. So they will, and they have in previous races, smeared persons who are not Richard Neal. Mm. So, for example, in a recent race, you know, it was proven, the smear that happened against Alex Morse was proven by the New York Times and The Intercept to be unfounded. So they looked, they interviewed the victims, the supposed victims at UMass, and they found that there were actually no victims. There were it was all a consenting situation. And then I watched Richard Neal in a debate with Alex Morse after this was proven that there were no victims. Richard Neal said during the debate, well, we have to believe the victims. He said that even though he knew there were no victims. Mm. So he just said it as a smear. And the Democratic Party backed him up on that, and they have backed up on other efforts to run against him. They do nefarious behaviors to undermine it, not substantive behaviors. So I just thought, well, I've never been a Democrat. I've never been a Republican either. So I'll just try. You know, there's 337,000 independents in our district. Hmm. That's more than double the number of Democrats. There's 148,000 Democrats and 50,000 Republicans. So I thought, well, most people are like me. Most people are not in a party. So I have more of a chance to reach people and run outside of a party.
Fair to say, though, in Massachusetts, the real power structure is the Democratic Party, right? And it's difficult to get beyond that.
It is the power structure, but they have to have a heads up that they're not serving the needs of human beings. So I just chose issues that I could actually move forward. Like, for example, an issue in our district that affects every single person in the district is that we don't have enough medical doctors here. Mm. So we have to pay for health insurance. But in a practical sense, our health care is not covered because we don't have the personnel. We don't have enough doctors, enough nurses, enough nurse practitioners, or mental health professionals. Mm. And so people have a health problem.
And it's difficult attracting those professionals to come and practice here also.
Yeah, they try to make an appointment. And they're like 4 months out, 6 months out, and then their health gets worse. It isn't just about attracting health professionals. There's a bill in Congress, which is a bipartisan bill, which is under the Ways and Means Committee, where Richard Neal is ranking member, and he is not supporting it. He has not signed on to it, and is to increase the number of doctors in our country. So in 1997, Richard Neal helped pass a bill which limited the number of residencies, which is under the Medicare. So that was a bottleneck. So then you couldn't have more doctors produced in our country. And then that was lifted. That cap on residencies was lifted 20 years later. But we're still behind. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the bottlenecks to getting more medical doctors to meet the needs of our population in our country. Now, in our area, it's much different than Boston, because in Boston, they have all kinds of specialties and all kinds of financial opportunities for doctors. And so they have enough doctors in that area. Mm-hmm. But in our area, we're shorted. So right. We have to also have other financial incentives to bring people in. And all of that is possible. Mm-hmm. You just have to focus and make it happen.
So running again as an independent or unenrolled, if you will, not as a Democrat or a Republican, and with the House and the Senate in this election cycle being so closely watched that it could go either way. And even after the election, it could be, you know, a razor thin margin. Have you decided whether you would caucus with the Democrats or the Republicans if you're elected?
I haven't decided definitively, but it seems likely that I would caucus with the Democrats, because that is what my district would want me to do. Mm-hmm. So my district, even though they're mostly independent, they vote Democratic. So as a representative, you have to represent what your people want you to do. And it probably would be most advantageous if the Democrats win the House. It probably would be most advantageous for the district for me to do that. Mm-hmm. But I think it's important for me to take this step by step, and at each step to look at what is the best advantage for the district. And so,
Okay. Nadia Milleron is my guest here this morning on Morning Drive. She's a candidate for Congress in the 1st Massachusetts District, running against Congressman Richard Neal. Give us your top three issues facing this district, not so much the country and the larger issues, but the specific three issues that you feel like a 1st Massachusetts district considers the most important that you could address as a congresswoman.
So the first one is one I already went over, which is the number of doctors and medical professionals mm-hmm. in our district. That is a crucial issue that I could really make a difference on. I can even make a difference outside of Congress as an individual working on it. So I plan to work on it regardless, because it would really improve the quality of life for people in the district. The second issue is manufacturing, reshoring manufacturing to our district. So we have a shortage of medical products that are produced here. So generic pharmaceuticals are produced in India and China, and they also don't have proper standards, not proper labor standards, environmental standards, or actually what the medicine is made of. Mm. So there are...
Wouldn't the companies in America, though, be required to meet certain standards no matter where the drugs are prepared?
No. So if you buy a brand name drug, and so in our household, even though we don't want to support big pharma, we only buy brand name drugs because they have a formula and they have to adhere to that formula and those standards. Mm-hmm. But generic pharmaceuticals produced in India and China do not adhere to American standards, mm-hmm. even though they are sold to you in the store here in the United States. So We need to have the security of having medical products, including masks and other medical supplies needed for hospitals. We need to produce them here in our country. Mm. And this district is uniquely suited to do some of that production. Mm-hmm. So we have to have the incentive for the manufacturer to produce that here. Tariffs is a way to do that.
Yeah, so that was going to be my question, because that certainly is a hot button issue right now in the presidential race, is whether tariffs can and should be used. There's one candidate that's basically saying, tariffs on everything to bring everything back to the United States. And then another candidate is saying, well, targeted tariffs might work. Are you more in favor of the targeted tariffs model?
So I think that any incentive that we can put forward to... And it's interesting to think about the people that are involved in the policy. Mm-hmm. So Catherine Tai, who is currently the trade representative for the Biden administration, and Robert Lighthizer, who was the trade representative for Trump, there's no daylight between their policies. Mm. So they both push for tariffs to reshore American manufacturing and give the incentive to the manufacturer to say, oh, well, if I don't want to pay tariffs, I just have to produce in the United States. Mm. So I would go, since there's no daylight between them, I think just going for those positions, it would be would be the best thing
and
to do.
What if that raised prices, though, for consumers?
Yeah, so it wouldn't raise prices if people produce the goods here.
Wouldn't it be more expensive to produce it here?
I mean, you have to look at expense. Like, there's expense with pollution in the world, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of expenses that we're kind of ignoring. It's expense to our communities not to have good jobs here, mm-hmm. because then people have to have 3 service jobs and they don't get benefits. So there's those kind of expenses that are kind of hidden. So if you step forward and say, we want to pay for our products, we want to pay for them to be manufactured here, and we're willing to invest in and pay the price so that we can have the jobs and so that we can have strong economic communities, then I think if you look at that whole picture, then the expense is really worth it.
All right, fair enough. And that was the first two main issues for the district. I'll give you a chance for the third one.
Yeah, the third one is opioid abuse. Mm. So we have in Berkshire County, we have, you know, have had more than 400 people in the last 2 years die from opioid and primarily fentanyl. So how does that come into our homes? Through UPS and Federal Express primarily. Mm. So we don't have any inspection on packages that are valued under $800, but we need to. So, I think it's Representative Blumenauer now has a bill, and finally Richard Neal has signed on to that bill, which is different than some other, than Social Security efforts and everything that he has not signed on to. But he has signed on to that, but he could have moved that forward, and this is a primary, very important issue in our district where we're having the loss of all these young people. It's a devastating, like going through the grief myself, I can see how destabilizing this for our whole is for our whole community. So we really have to step up and do something about this. We can have dogs, we can have mechanical inspection of these packages, and we just need to pass a law to allow for the inspections. It is the biggest loophole. $800 is the biggest loophole in the whole world. There's no other country that have that.
So you're saying basically that packages over $800 in value get inspected, but the ones under $800 do not?
Correct.
And so how would the program like that get rolled out? What would that look like? Would that mean increased scanning? Would that increase prices for shipping, things like that? How would that all play out?
No, I think that the inspections can happen. There's no reason for increased prices, mm-hmm. because it's government inspection. So allowing for the government to inspect the packages. Yeah. So right now, UPS allows for voluntary inspection on Thursday afternoon. So if you're tracking the package and you see that it was held up on Thursday afternoon and it has fentanyl in it, you just don't open the package. You know, you don't have anything to do with it. Mm-hmm. And then Federal Express doesn't allow any inspection at all. Mm. So those voluntary inspections are not working. You know, the fentanyl still is delivered to our homes and people are taking it by accident. A lot of people don't know what they're taking. Right. I don't think a dealer means for their customer to die on their couch. People die at parties. It's a horrible, horrible tragedy, and we can prevent it.
Right, and we certainly have documented that here on our show on multiple occasions, talking about the fentanyl crisis. And usually we don't get a chance to talk about the larger issues. We only really talk about the issues here on the ground. You know, what can you do to reverse a fentanyl overdose and how to, you know, reduce stigma and things like that. But certainly the source of this is coming from outside.
Right. I'm not saying this is going to solve the whole problem, but it would reduce deaths. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. I'm very interested in reducing deaths. And I think it's also under the Ways and Means Committee, which is the jurisdiction of Richard Neal. And so he has not, again, addressed this fundamental and important issue to his district.
Okay. So you've made the issue of big money and special interests a central issue in your campaign, for sure. If you're elected, what kinds of remedies to this entrenched system that have some chance of succeeding would you propose? Because it's a big system and it's tough, right, to take a scythe to that. How do you go about changing it?
Are you talking about money in people's elections?
Yeah, money in politics, for sure, and in elections, yes.
Right, so each representative can only do so much. So I have identified the issues I mentioned that I'm actually going to work on. Mm-hmm. Any effort to limit money in politics, I would simply support. Mm-hmm. I think I am not taking any corporate money. And so all of the maximum people can give to me is $3,300. Mm-hmm. Richard Neal has $4 million in his account. It's very interesting to go to the FEC website and look at how he's spending that money. And to me, it just explains everything about his relationship with the district. So he spends $4,600 every month on his son, who has a company, but he only has two clients, his dad and another client. He doesn't have any other income. So he spent over $80,000 during this election cycle on his own son. And then he also spends it on a resort in California, a resort in Texas. He spends it on a hotel in Washington, D.C., where he has a multi-million dollar house, different restaurants in New York, in Washington, D.C., in Virginia. So $11,000 on a limousine company. So these are all expenditures outside the district. If I had $4 million, and Richard Neal is explaining that he cannot campaign during this election cycle in his district because he's campaigning for Kamala. Okay, I accept that. But he could do so much to amplify the concerns of his voters here in our district with that money. So he could hire young people from the universities and colleges in our district to do forums on fentanyl, on healthcare, on food access, on housing. These are all issues that are of great concern to the people in his district. And then he could gather the information and then help those students could help him address those issues. And people would feel hurt and people would feel that at least he was doing his job, which is, you know, the founding fathers didn't want people to be in for 34 years. They had the idea that we would be farmers or lawyers and then we would take 2 years and leave the district and go to Washington, take the concerns of the district to Washington, and then come home. So there should be term limits, which also would help with this problem.
Should these be national term limits or should these be proposed by the states?
I think they should be national term limits. Oh, any kind of term limits is great. Hmm. But since I'm applying for a federal job.
Yeah. Would a congressional term limit look like? How many terms do you think a congressperson should serve?
Ideally, if we could change the Constitution, the term would be 4 years. So you could actually get something done and mm-hmm. 2 terms, right? Mm. 2 terms of 4 years. So I would pledge that if I was elected, I would run for 3 terms of 2 years each. Mm. So 6 years. Mm. So, but ideally to actually move legislation forward and not just be spending your second year running for office, ideally you would have a 4-year term and another 4-year term if you got reelected. And then leave, because what you see with Richard Neal is that, you know, he 4 years ago, he thought that we should have take the sludge with the PCBs in it from the Housatonic River and have it processed and have it placed in a safe place. Now he thinks that the right place for that sludge is a residential area in Lee next to the river that it came out of and right next to a state park. PCBs are carcinogens. One of my children died of cancer from an environmental cause. Lots of people have been sick and died from PCB exposure. This is absolutely an unacceptable thing to sell out the district for $50,000, but it saves General Electric millions of dollars in terms of transport because they would have to take all of this material to the processing center in New York State and then take it to the place where it would be stored. So it's very cost effective for them to give that money to Richard Neal. And I can't believe that he would sell us out like that. But it's also true with pharmaceuticals. You know, Richard Neal was the only member of the Mass delegation in December of 2023 to vote against transparency and pharmaceutical pricing. What does that do for us? It helps make our insurance rates go down. If we can see what everybody's paying for these medicines, then it puts some control over insurance rates going up. But all of the members of the Mass delegation, and there are 9 of them, except Richard Neal, voted for that, and it passed. But why should he vote against it? Because he gets a big amount of money contributions from the pharmaceutical industry. So you can go over his record over and over and see this pay-for-play type of thing. And it only came out to be this strong since he's been in office so long and receiving so much money. So if you limit the term, that also limits the corruption.
And we've got about 30 seconds here before we go to our top of the hour break. Just one more follow-up on that. The argument typically against term limits is that You're taking choice away from the voter, and the voter ultimately is the term limit. So if the congressperson or the senator or the president, except the president already has a term limit, isn't doing a good job, then the voters can have their say and get rid of them. So does that system not work anymore? And why are term limits needed then if the voters still have a choice?
It doesn't work anymore because you can't reach the voter. And that's why this interview is so important, because I can't, you know, no matter how much I pay, I would have to pay millions and millions of dollars to reach 500,000 voters. So that's why, because the voter doesn't have the contact.
Gotcha. All right. Well, we're going to take that top of the hour break here. We're speaking with Nadia Milleron. She is a candidate for Congress in the 1st Massachusetts District, and we're glad that she's here to give us her side of the campaign. With only less than 3 weeks left in the campaign, the election day is that first week of November, the first Tuesday of November, as always. And we hope that people do get out and vote on that day. It's going to be probably a very popular day to come vote, because I think everyone wants to have their say, at least on the presidential side. And then everything else, you know, when you're there, you know that you have information like this that you're hearing today on WTBR-FM to help make your decision while you're there in the voting booth. So let's go ahead and take that top of the hour break. This is WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7. We'll be back right after this.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR-FM.
Whoa, like, what exactly is happening here?
89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs. Greylock Federal, opportunity grows here. With locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from Evgo Hypnosis. Join Evgo Hypnosis October 17th for the inaugural Hypno Mixer for singles at J7 on Winter Street in Pittsfield. Discover the benefits of hypnosis while mingling with other singles in a relaxed and enjoyable setting. For more details and to register, visit evcohypnosis.com.
Underwriters are so important for keeping this station alive. Hi, this is Sean Sayre, Executive Director of PCTV. I'd like to thank our local businesses for supporting Pittsfield Community Radio and for believing in the mission of the station. When you hear underwriting messages on the air, you know those companies support WTBR-FM. If you're listening now and your business would like to join in and support us, call me today at 445-4234 and get involved, or visit us at WTBRFM.com. It will make all the difference.
Hi, I'm Hannah with Berkshire Business and Professional Women. We are an inclusive organization that empowers women in the Berkshires. Members represent various professional backgrounds with a common goal: to be our best selves. Whatever that journey looks like, BBPW is here to help with programming and professional development opportunities. Through our scholarship program, we support the aspirations of Berkshire women furthering their goals. To learn more about us, please visit berkshirebpw.org.
Support for this public service announcement comes from Berkshire Community College and Park Square Productions.
Support Larry Kratzer here on WTBR, and I want to tell you about my show, Sweet Country Music. Now, every Sunday morning from 11 a.m. until noon, I'll play some of the best classic country artists like Merle Haggard, Dolly Parton, Johnny Cash, Patsy Cline, and many more. I'll play nothing before 2008. Please join me Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. for the next edition of Sweet Country Music here on 89.7 WTBR-FM. For the love of radio.
Online at Sondrini.com.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back, WTBR.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
Welcome back to Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Sean Sayre here with you live and local this morning in our studio, and glad to have Nadia Miller on here as a guest this morning for the full hour. She's running for Congress. She's a candidate for Congress in the 1st Massachusetts District, and we'll be talking to her more about some of the things that she believes are the big issues here in the district and what she proposes to do about it. First, let's get to the weather forecast and find out what we have in store for us today.
Berkshire weather.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, widespread frost with patchy fog this morning. Sunny. Highs in the mid-50s. North wind around 5 miles per hour. Tonight, clear. Widespread frost after midnight. Lows in the lower 30s. North wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Friday, widespread frost in the morning. Sunny. Highs in the lower 60s. North wind around 5 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, back again, and frost in the forecast for sure. We got that this morning when you got out. Maybe it burned off by the time you got up, but when I got up, it was certainly frosty out there. All right, welcome back to the show, Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR-FM. And thanks again, Nadia Milleron, for being here this morning. Let's talk about a couple of other things. Larger than the first district here in Massachusetts, there are two hot wars going on in the world right now, Russia and Ukraine and Israel and the many fronts that they're fighting on over there. So tell us what your position is on both of those. Start with whichever one you'd like.
So I think that we can't afford to support those wars. So FEMA was $9 billion short on taking care of the flood victims. And in the same week, we sent $8.7 billion for foreign war. So that isn't something that we can do.
Do you think we can't do both of those things?
We cannot. No. So I think we need to take care of our own people here first. And if FEMA is actually short, then we better make sure that they're not short before we can do some other kind of foreign interventions. So, and I also am very conscious about being implicated in a crime. So to send money to slaughter innocent people, then you're part of a crime. Then anybody who approves that money is a criminal. Mm. So I don't want to be a criminal. So I wouldn't engage with that.
The war in Ukraine is the largest land war since World War II, and it's from a major superpower that's nuclear-armed, Russia. And it feels like they have intentions on not making Ukraine the last thing that they do. And looking back at World War II, it would have been a mistake not to contain and fight Nazi Germany, for example. Does this have any echoes of that for you? Would that be something if we just decided not to support Ukraine, then Russia sort of rolls in and takes it and then takes Poland and takes something else? That's okay?
No, that's not okay. But there were attempts to resolve this conflict. And the U.S. and the U.K. actively opposed those attempts because there's a lot of money making going on in terms of these weapons. We need to resolve the conflict. We need to help stop war. But to feed war and sell more weapons and do all these kind of activities, this actually hurts regular human beings and injures and kills more innocent people and actually causes more problems. So there were numerous people that were watching those negotiations earlier on in the war and watched how the U.S. and the U.K. opposed the negotiations and told Ukraine, no, 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 just go ahead. Just go ahead and do everything that you might want to because we will back you up. Well, I think that was irresponsible on the part of the U.S. Mm-hmm. and not something that the citizens of the U.S. want to be engaged in.
Seems like the U.S. has been actually restricting Ukraine from, let's say, bombing into Russian territory, for example, and putting limits on those types of things. And I don't know if that's, a good thing, if that helps or hurts the whole process. What do you think?
But you have to take another step back and say, are we actually engaging in peace negotiations, in actually engaging in a resolution of the conflict?
Do you think Vladimir Putin wants peace, or do you think he just wants the war to continue?
Well, I think there are different leverages that you can push against him. I have no idea what he actually wants, but that's not how international diplomacy works. You use leverage to push on people to show them how it's in their better interest to not go in a certain direction. So, but I don't think that there's been so much corruption with that war. A lot of the money that we've poured into it has gone into the officials in Ukraine buying cars and having a lot of luxury. And this is all documented. So I don't think that's where we want our tax dollars to go.
Okay. Let's talk about corporate tax rates and tax policy in general. Would you vote to raise corporate taxes, even if that puts American companies at a competitive disadvantage compared to other countries? Because there's talk now about raising that, and Kamala Harris has certainly talked about raising that to a certain level, 25%, 28%. President Trump has talked about bringing it down to 15% or 10% to be more competitive. Where would you stand on that?
We don't need to raise corporate taxes because there's so many companies that simply don't pay their taxes. We just have to collect what is unpaid and what is lawfully needs to be paid. You know, we shouldn't have offshoring of people who sell products in the United States, who run their business in the United States, should not claim that they aren't U.S. companies and that they have some kind of status outside the United States so that they don't pay taxes. That's where I would go, into just pay lawful taxes.
Okay. There were tax cuts that were put in place in 2017 when former President Trump was in office, and those tax cuts are due to expire in 2025. What would your position be on either keeping those tax cuts in place or changing tax policy again to potentially, you know, change the percentage of what people pay in the various tiers of income tax?
Those taxes are for the very, very wealthy. So I would let them expire because we don't need the very wealthy to have those tax cuts. We need regular Americans to be able to function and to be able to be able to function as best they can with the limited amount of money that they make. The prices are so crazy in the grocery store, and the prices of regular products that people need and rent and that's where we need to focus, is giving a regular person a break and not a very, very extremely wealthy entity.
Okay. The national debt and deficit are looming crises that our country faces right now. And also, Social Security and Medicare funding are both in danger over the next decade to maybe 15 years. What remedies do you have in mind that might address some of these crises coming up?
Yeah, I don't think this is my expertise. A person can't know everything about everything.
Sure.
So I think that I'm very worried about the national debt. I am a fiscally conservative person. In my own life, I don't spend more than I have. So I would want to address it, but I would not be able to spearhead that, not with my background, not with the knowledge that I have.
Okay. Let's talk about something closer to your strengths, which is talk about Boeing for a moment in the grander scheme of sort of a symptom of what's going on with, corporate America and the manufacturer of these sort of very large and very important planes. Why is it that a company like Boeing has had so many problems with safety assurance and things like that? How did they grow to the point where, was this something that a failure of regulation, a failure of policy on the national side? Why is it that we found ourselves, and this is a major issue, not just for Boeing, but for other companies that face, maybe tepid regulation from the U.S. government?
It's a perversion of capitalism. So the incentive system in the corporation is that you boost the stock price and then the executives get bonuses and compensation for the stock price going up. So they artificially boost the stock price. So the way capitalism works is you produce a great product and then people want to buy the product, right? And it works well. The better it works, the more people want to buy it, and then you're competitive. But in Boeing's case, they use 100% of their profits to buy back their stock to artificially boost the stock price so that the executives get their bonuses, but they're not putting the money into the product. They're not making their product better. In fact, they're shorting their product. So they decided to take out all the inspectors. So it was interesting to listen to Mike Whitaker, who is the administrator of the FAA. He said twice in a recent hearing that each plane gets 1,600 inspections. Each plane used to get 16,000 inspections because planes are put together by human beings. They're not put together by robots like cars are. And so you have to have those inspections because people make mistakes. Those inspections are simply one employee going over to check on the job that another employee has done. Boeing took all of those out. Now they put some of them back, but they listened to Toyota and they got advice from Toyota, and Toyota said, you don't need all those inspectors, that's expensive. But what's actually expensive is all the defects that are now in planes that are in service, and that pilots are trying to deal with these defects because there were no inspections, and so the defects weren't cut. So that, this is like a simple thing. They're shorting their product to pay the executives. Mm.
But wasn't some of the inspection also sort of offloaded onto the company from the government? The government basically said, well, you know your planes better than we do, so why don't you do the inspections and then tell us how everything went, rather than having government inspectors that have leverage and come in and can say, no, you got to stop this. This isn't safe. You have to change this.
That's absolutely correct. And now I think for the whole country, the FAA now has 30 inspectors, which is just laughable. I mean, you cannot, you need to have 100 inspectors per shift, mm-hmm. in order to really like notice what's going on with Boeing. But even Boeing itself could manage the situation if they had the right incentives. But the executives are off on an incentive system which has nothing to do with the company and the product. And actually, the incentive system is driving their company into the ground. It's going to destroy the company.
We're talking with Nadia Miller on here on Morning Drive, 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. She is a candidate for Congress in the 1st Massachusetts District, running against Congressman Richard Neal. Let's talk about other forms of transportation for a moment. And there's certainly been an issue here in Berkshire County. I'm sure it's replicated across the state and the nation. Failing bridges, roads, rail that doesn't perform as well as it does in other developed nations. What is the best way that we can start to reinvest in some of that essential infrastructure that we need in our daily lives?
Yeah, the federal government is really important for infrastructure projects. And different administrations have said, yes, we're going to step up. We're going to do these infrastructure projects. And that I have seen in my community, as there's two bridges out so that I can't even get to my own house, there's people that work around me that now have to pay an extra $10 a day of gas just because we have to go way far around to get to our homes and our work. So I think all of this can be solved. It's a matter of organization. So the Department of Defense has failed the last 6 years of audits. When we get that information that they failed the audits, do we follow the money? Do we see, where did the money go and how can we correct that? No, we just do another audit and say, then they fail the next year. Then we have to actually find this money and use it for, we need to organize the tax dollars and be fiscally responsible to the taxpayers. Mm. And then address the needs of the taxpayers. That's why we pay taxes. So it's crazy that we spend money abroad, especially to countries that have, a subsidized housing and universal health care for their people. And then we don't have bridges or health care or roads, and we struggle with all these things. So we have to take the money that is being wasted at the moment and use it for these type of projects.
Do you feel that the infrastructure law that was passed in the Biden administration goes at least some way toward fixing some of that?
It does, but I don't feel that it's being implemented. Mm. So I think there's some between the cup and the lip, there seems to be some kind of slip. So as a representative, you don't just funnel money into your district. You also have to do investigations, look at the issues that are of concern to your district, do hearings, call people on the carpet that are in the government and say, so what are you doing about this? Are you implementing this bill? If I was on the Transportation Infrastructure Committee, I would ask the administration, what are you doing to implement the bill that Congress passed? That's part of the job of Congress, to have accountability.
Mm. And let's move toward another hot button issue in this year's election nationally, which is immigration. And there was a proposed bipartisan immigration bill that was killed basically by former President Trump when he told his Republican colleagues in Congress and the Senate to vote against it. What would your position be on bipartisan legislation to address the immigration issue?
Yeah, I would support the bipartisan legislation, but more importantly, I would support the laws we already have. So we have good immigration laws. We just need to enforce them. They're not being enforced at the borders.
Is there enough money right now to do that?
again, we have to distribute the money so that it actually works for our country and not, you know, waste it and you know, send it for other projects.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You had mentioned drug prices. There are sort of a lot of healthcare issues around not only the prices of pharmaceuticals, but also support for hospitals and Medicare. We see that there are some struggling hospitals. There was a hospital company that was a for-profit hospital, and they went bankrupt in the mostly in the eastern part of Massachusetts, but in other states as well. And Medicare reimbursements are difficult for hospitals in some ways. Is there some national policy beyond the Affordable Care Act that can make sure that we can continue to have good hospital care and effective drugs at reasonable prices?
I only know that we need those things and that I would advocate for those things. But of a ready-made solution that already exists, I am not clear that there is such a solution on the table.
Yeah.
But we definitely need to pursue those goals.
Okay. Let's talk about good high-paying jobs in this district, which is always the meat and potatoes, if you will, of a congressional campaign, because typically we want our representatives to go to Washington and fight for what we need here in our district, and certainly good manufacturing jobs, higher-paying high-tech jobs, things like that, I think are very important to citizens. What is the best method, do you think, to encourage that type of thing? And if you got to Congress, would you be able to also, you know, bring home the bacon, if you will?
Yeah, so bringing home the bacon for different projects in the district, like the money that hospitals need, the money that infrastructure projects need, that is a separate thing from encouraging business to come back in the district. But yes, any congressperson can advocate for that. It's not only somebody that has been in Congress a long time. So I would be in a uniquely powerful position because of the close, the nature of so many Republicans and Democrats being very close in number. So then they would want to curry favor with an independent. So each party would wish for me to join them. So I could just cross my arms and say, well, only if you do this for my district. Only if, you know, so in that way, I would have leverage as an independent. And then as far as bringing, we need to have a healthy economy. We need to have 15% manufacturing. The Boston area has about 10% manufacturing. We have under 7% manufacturing now in our district. So you can really see the hurt that the economic difficulties that each community and all the boarded up buildings and everything where there used to be manufacturing. So we have to have support the current trade representative and, you know, has the same policies as the Trump trade representative. Catherine Tai is the Biden trade representative. Robert Lighthizer worked for the Trump administration, and they don't have any daylight between the policies that they promote in terms of tariffs, in terms of incentives to promote manufacturing in our country. And specifically in our district, we can definitely address the need for us to have the security of medical products. So not just generic pharmaceuticals, but other kinds of medical products that we were caught flat-footed during COVID, and we didn't learn those lessons. So we have to start producing those kind of... Now, Richard Neal, he supported China to have most favored nation status and to go into the World Trade Organization. And what was the result of that? That China just produces tons and tons of manufactured goods that we buy, right? And so all the consumer goods are produced by China. So that is not a good plan to promote them in the World Trade Organization. So I would do the opposite. I would promote American manufacturing.
Mm-hmm. And of course, there in the global trade that has really been strong in the last 30 to 40 years since the opening of China, I think that we learned a lot during the pandemic of you can't just source one thing from one country that could suddenly just stop producing it. We have that issue right now with chips being manufactured in Taiwan, for example. But also a lot of companies have gone and, you know, said, okay, well, we can't do it all in China, so now we'll go to Vietnam. We'll go to Singapore. We'll go to other, you know, places that can manufacture these places. So your idea would be we should really pull back from all of that offshoring.
Yeah, we have to produce these necessary consumer items, especially in healthcare here. We have to produce them here.
So the critical items that we can't do without.
Right, exactly.
But during the pandemic, we also had a problem, a shortage of toilet paper, which is mostly made here in the United States. We didn't have to ship that in from China. And yet we lost that.
That's a function of panic. So when people panic, they buy water and toilet paper. So I think that's what,
as we found out.
Right.
Nadia Milleron is my guest here this morning running for Congress. And let's just talk about the other big elephant in the room, if you will, for this election season, which is abortion rights and reproductive freedom. What's your stand on that? Would you support the reinstitution of legislated Roe v. Wade, for example?
I don't want to do anything to block people's health care. It's not my business what decisions people make. I have a libertarian view on that, but I want everybody to have all the health care that they need. So that is how I approach that issue.
Okay. And the first Massachusetts district, we sort of spoke a little off air before we got on today, is a very large district, geographically speaking. They're all the same in terms of population. Every congressional district has the same number of people, but the first Massachusetts is a wide-reaching district, right? From all the way from the Berkshires, almost in New York State, all the way through Worcester County. Tell us what you think. And since we're here in Pittsfield talking about it here, what distinguishes the Berkshires from the other parts of the district that you've visited and you've talked to people there as you're running for the entire district? What makes the Berkshires different?
We have more agriculture in our district. We produce more food here. There's a disconnect. In our whole district, we have more people on SNAP benefits than any other district in Massachusetts. So there's a disconnect between food production and the people who need the food. I think we have environmental issues in the Berkshires that are different than, we have the Housatonic River. We need to pay attention to how we're dealing with carcinogenic material, as we have experienced a lot of cancer in the Pittsfield area and surrounding areas due to the pollution from General Electric. So those are all issues that the electorate, is the people, are really concerned about and have tried to organize around. And there has been a secrecy and a lack of transparency on the decision making of where that dump should go. And that's how it ended up in a residential area in Lee.
Okay.
As there isn't input by people.
And in the last couple of minutes that we have here, because it's gone by so fast, tell us how you would distinguish yourself as a member of Congress as compared to the person who holds the job right now. How would you see yourself approaching the job, your responsiveness to residents and to constituents? Would that change? Would that be different? How do you see it?
It would absolutely be different. So I've been on the receiving end. I've been a constituent. And, each office is going to receive about 30,000 calls for help from the constituents out of 770,000 people. You have to be ready for that. I mean, of all over 300 offices that I've been in and out of, my own congressperson, Richard Neal's office, is the least responsive and the least, engaged with the district of any office I've been in. So I want to bring up that standard. I want to make the office responsive. I care a lot about people and their suffering. I feel the suffering of people in this district, and I'm going to address it. I'm driven to address it because I've suffered. Also, everybody suffers who's alive, but we don't have to ignore each other. We can help each other. And certainly this office can be very helpful to people. And so that is the highest distinguishing factor between me and Richard Neal, is that I want to be responsive. I'm from an edge of the district. So he typically ignores Berkshire County. He also ignores Worcester County. He pays more attention to Springfield. And so I want to bring the needs of all the human beings in the district into view of the representative's office.
Great. Nadia Milleron, it's been great to have you here this morning. One last question for you. Red Sox or Yankees?
No commercial. I'll leave the commercial sports to somebody else.
All right. We had to ask. It is one of those questions you ask when you're talking to somebody in Berkshire County, because who knows? You could be a Yankee fan or a Red Sox fan. I won't divulge my cares on that either for this morning. I'll save that for Howard Herman.
I hope they help out their fans with whatever the fans need.
There you go. Okay. Well, Nadia Milleron, candidate for Congress here in the 1st Massachusetts District, I want to thank you for being here this morning on Morning Drive and answering some difficult questions. And good luck with the campaign going forward with only less than 3 weeks left to go.
Thank you so much, Sean. Right. Thank you.
You bet. All right, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your day, and we will see you here again tomorrow. I forgot who we have tomorrow, but it's going to be a great show. I know it, and you'll want to tune in. We'll be live. That's the most important thing. All right. Take care.